Mike and Vianna, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Vianna, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RHAP BNB for episode 3 of Survivor David versus Goliath. My name is Mike Bloom, bringing you all of our talk about this very dramatic episode of Survivor David versus Goliath and everything that surrounded it. We will certainly get into. First, let me bring in somebody who I will confirm was on the podcast last week. She has enough self-awareness to know that her voice came out a bit wonky, but this was indeed her. No, vocal dubbing by Rourke or anything like that. Liana Boris, can you explain a bit more as to what happened last week?
No, because I genuinely can't. I do not know what happened. To everybody asking, I am fine. I am alive. I do not know what happened to my voice. Something with the recording. So stop asking me because I'm fine. Although it did make me question whether or not I was fine. Can confirm, am fine. Totally alive. Voice should be normal on this podcast, but we'll wait and see. Who knows what technology has in store for me. But I think we're good to go.
Yeah, it's very equivalent to like when someone comes up to you like, oh, you look tired. Like, it really makes you doubt yourself. Like, yeah. Okay, do I look tired? Is there something wrong with me?
Yeah, exactly. I may have been tired, but it was still me. And I'm okay. I am just here to practice my old school human skills. So let me be and let me practice my conversations.
So we have something fun up our Jeremy-esque fancy sleeves for this week. We're bringing in a new guest from our neighbor to the north to the B&B. You might recognize her from her stint on Big Brother Canada 6, as well as the live feed updates over the summer with Big Brother 20, Kirsten McInnes. Welcome to the B&B. How you doing?
Hello. Thank you for having me. The thing is, no one is going to recognize me from my stint on BB Can, but I really appreciate that it keeps coming up. I heard you guys had a shortage of toothbrush blondes, so I thought I'd pop in, stay at the B&B.
Good. We need toothbrushes. We have not been good with the toiletries this season, so we are in scant supply.
Yeah, actually, you know how like hotels provide shampoo and like, you know, conditioner, whatever. Ours is just one all mixed together. It's like some version of like sham paste because it's, you know, everything. So if you could bring extra supplies, that would be helpful.
I mean, I just assumed you guys had a penicillin station and that's it. So honestly, this is an improvement.
I don't even think we're that prepared.
No, we offer inoculations going in just to be like, listen, we don't know what's in here. So you want to prepare yourself for basically everything.
Yeah, so
I
definitely need some vaccinations.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. We're one of those places that the CDC is like, okay, here's your list of vaccinations you need before you visit the B&B.
So many abbreviations. Well, Kirsten, before we get into David versus Goliath proper, I would love to hear your, since this is your first time gracing our presence, your Survivor origin story. When did you get into the show and what has kept you going along on this sweet, sweet Survivor train for so many years?
So here's the thing is I have absolutely no business talking about Survivor. I came into Survivor super late. I was not allowed to watch reality TV when I was a kid. I came into Survivor like for Second Chances and then went back to watch old. So I'm like a new Survivor fan. I watched everything so fast. I don't really remember anything, but I'm enjoying it. And I'm like the new generation of Survivor fans, except I'm the same age as people who've been watching since day one.
And people who have been on the show as well. So wait, can I backtrack here? Far be it from me to, you know, peek into anybody's home life, but was there any particular reason you're like Elizabeth's family where like they said, nope, no Survivor, no reality TV for you growing up? Why was that?
Well, so my mom, Vanessa, she had a rule. And if she thought something seemed stupid, we weren't allowed to do it. So she thought reality TV was stupid. So we weren't allowed. Even like a few years ago, she finally started watching Big Brother with me. And then I was like, okay, but try watching Survivor. I think you'd really like it. And she's like, no, Survivor's stupid. So honestly, if she knew I was on this podcast, I'd probably get pulled out of it. So
I like that this idea that Survivor is more stupid than Big Brother, because I feel like a lot of people might disagree with that sentiment.
I was like, do you even know what Survivor is? She's like, it's where there's people on an island and they're mean to each other and it's stupid.
And I was
like, Kate, but like, do you think they're nice on Big Brother? And she was like, I only watch Big Brother for you.
Well, because they're like brothers, they're like siblings.
Yeah,
and
that's
so
true.
Oh, it has the family values. Yeah, okay. Yeah. It all makes sense now.
I love this. I love this log line for Survivor. It's people on an island and they're mean to each other and it's stupid.
Yeah.
That's the summary.
So that's Vanessa's take.
Well, let's tuck into this episode proper and David versus Goliath up to this point. Kirsten, how have you been enjoying this stupid season of this stupid show that is Survivor?
I mean, it's so stupid. No, I've been loving it. I mean, Natalie is still on my TV, so I'm happy. It's been so nice to get to see from like all of the characters, really, except for Alec. And it's just nice to, you know, get that full view. I feel like it's more holistic so far than other seasons because we're not just focusing on, you know, two people.
Mm. Yeah, I was trying to think of, you know, who do I sort of not have a story for yet? I think Alec is one. I think Allison is another. I'm trying to think of other people probably on the Goliath tribe. But I mean, we've really seen at least a decent amount from everybody on the David tribe, probably because they've gone to tribal once. And now we're learning more about the Goliath tribe. And so it definitely feels like sort of what you said, Kirsten, of the holistic sort of, because we're getting more a little bit about everybody. And that's really nice with a few exceptions. And so I really appreciate that from an editing and storytelling perspective.
Yeah, but what I can,
there is an interesting.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
What I can say is I'm really hating these named alliances. I hate them so much.
Well, Thoroughbreds, Mason Dixon.
And it's not the maybe names, it's that they are named.
Because that's a Big Brother thing. I mean, but Big Brother's everybody's friends on Big Brother and everybody's mean. Survivor's stupid. I feel like the names then should be good, right?
You would think.
Hmm. I find there's an interesting sort of, I don't know if I want to say discrepancy, but I feel like, you know, like this episode, we got a lot of like emotional Carl and we got some B stuff going on as well. And it's interesting where I feel like the Davids in particular, we're really focusing around like their life outside of the island, while the Goliaths, we're finding out more about like the way they interact on the island. I don't know if that's just because the Davids have inherently, I wouldn't say this is very subjective, but maybe the more gripping stories in terms of like overcoming the odds outside of the show. But I do find that if we're talking about, you know, personal content as a way of character development, we're getting a lot more from the Davids from that perspective. Whereas if we're talking about like the way people are interacting on the island, that's where we're going to for the Goliaths.
Well, and how much can people relate to the Goliaths off the island, right? Like, I don't think there's that much there. Like for the general person watching Survivor, the Goliath lives are not really what they're going to connect to. So it makes sense to me from that perspective.
I really connect with Mike White personally. I just feel like his story of a writer in Hollywood is really easy for me to connect with.
Oh, see, it's a real like pull yourself up by your bootstraps and sit behind a typewriter, like that type of typical. It's the hero's journey, really.
Truly, the everyman story, the American dream. I think actually that's a really good point, because I'm trying to think of what I know personally about, you know, the players on the Goliath tribe, because Angelina's was all about her personal content. At least this episode was about her using her, you know, persuasive skills to get out of traffic violations. You know, Mike
and,
White
and discounts at restaurants. Let's remember that key fact.
Right? I need more information on that. Like, how do I get a discount at a restaurant?
It is happy hour. I know it's 8 p.m., but it is happy hour. Please give me this discount.
I wonder, like, how much of it is her being a smooth talker and how much of it is her being a can I speak to the manager type of attitude? Because I feel like one maybe is more prevalent than the other.
Do you think she, like, puts a hair in her own food to be like, excuse me, I found this in the bottom of my soup and I'm going to need this for free?
Like, oversalt it?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm so persuasive, I spit in my own food to get free meals.
Yeah. Okay, maybe that's more. Let's see, what else? Like, what, you know, even John. Like, what do I know about John? I know that he wrestled in Mexico, and he's the villain, right? Like, I don't know what else I know personally about these people.
He's working on his old school personal skills.
So, speaking of the Goliaths, let's start getting into the B&B fair, and let's start with the boot this episode. We're going to have a lot to say about Jeremy over the course of this podcast, suffice it to say. But let's go with our time capsule B&B predictions. Now, Jeremy, I would say across the board, was a pretty high prospect in the Survivor internet community. I know he went very quickly in a lot of people's drafts. Liana, when it came to your preseason prediction, did you feel similarly?
Okay, well, so there's two sort of divergent ideas in my mind, because when I listened to First One Out, I actually really didn't like Jeremy. I don't know what it was about him that I was like, I don't know, I just don't like him. He rubs me the wrong way. However, the AI had different opinions on him. So the AI, a.k.a. I guess me, had Jeremy going in the jury. So I had him making jury. And this is what I/the AI wrote. Okay. Jeremy started the game strong by relying on his social game because people relate to he and he strong honesty. But come merge, he became overconfident and underestimated his fellow alliance mates. He thought, because I logical, me intuitive, I stay and fly. But he did not stay and fly, as he was blindsided by his own alliance, who were pissed after he strong-armed them into voting his way. Jeremy flew to Ponderosa instead, where he set his sights on his next dream after Survivor of one day being, hopefully, Oprah's attorney's hero.
Ooh, okay. There's a lot to unpack here. First, I think the AI believes that Jeremy is some sort of unfrozen caveman lawyer, literally, because he keeps saying, like, me, Jeremy, me vote people out.
I intuitive.
And also the aspiration to be not Oprah's attorney, but Oprah's attorney's hero. The person that the attorney looks up to is a very, very niche goal. But you know what? Shoot small, right?
Yeah. So there were sort of the way I did this is I, you know, do the sentence generator and then I sort of pick the sentences that I like that sort of inform how I feel Jeremy will play. So one of the things I did notice was he used a lot of I, me statements. So like I logical, me intuitive, I stay and fly. And like, it's silly, but I feel like that also sort of then represents him as a person. He talks a lot about me, a lot about I. And so it's a lot of focus on himself and not about sort of how he's relating to other people. On the flip side, Oprah's attorney's hero. What does that say about Jeremy? That one, I don't know. So this could be me trying to ascribe more meaning to him as a player from his bio. But you know what? I just hope that one day he can become Oprah's attorney's hero.
I can't wait for, at the reunion, Oprah's attorney to stop the proceedings, to be like, wait a minute. My name is Sal Rodriguez. I'm Oprah's attorney, and I want to give Jeremy this check for $50,000 because he's inspired me so much.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Oh, I could totally see it. Oh, and I had I did have for his closest ally, Mike White. But I had for his worst enemy, Oprah's attorney. So
did you really put Oprah's attorney as his worst enemy?
Yeah, why not? I don't know. I feel like maybe he didn't do so well in the game and like turned off Oprah's attorney, Sierra, or Oprah's attorney. I don't know. In some way.
I just feel like you don't even want to win.
Are you throwing this game, Liana? Yeah.
I felt so bad for Mike, and I just have a lot of like dead weight on my team. I got to get rid of, so just throwing.
I'll take pity points wherever I can get. I actually think this is going to be a closer one than you might think initially.
Oh, no.
Because I also had Jeremy making the jury. I said that Jeremy will talk the most trash in confessionals. I'll say he'll be the least expressive when Jeff reveals rewards. And I said he'd be the first to make alliances with the other side after a swap, and did not do so well. I don't know how I could do worse than worst enemy Oprah's attorney, but I had his closest ally was Kara, and his worst enemy was Mike White.
Oh, no.
I also like that part of yours, we never got to test, right? Like, he never even made a swap, so, like, who knows? That could work for or against you, Mike.
And it's because he wasn't in a good spot. So I feel like in a swap, he definitely would have been the first one. He definitely.
Yeah, but he didn't even make it that far.
Okay, well, he didn't make it to the end either. So.
And there was debate amongst the Goliaths as to who would be the first person to make alliances with the other side during a swap, him or Natalie. And they deemed that he would be.
Yeah, because Natalie is Goliath strong in the swap, okay? Well, and then all of those I and me statements are so fun. It's like, you know what? Honestly, I stan. I have to give it to Mike. I'm sorry, Liana.
What? Hey!
I'm sorry.
You're going to be receiving a call from Oprah's attorney's hero sometime soon.
Okay, well, I honestly, this B&B is not what I expected, and I'd like to speak to your manager.
Oh, no, you're going to persuade them.
I'm going to persuade them to give me a discount.
I don't know. I don't know what a discount from $0 is. We might have to pay you.
Yeah, you guys have to actually pay me to be here.
So good. So good. I don't have all the answers. I have many of them, to quote Natalie, which was just such a fun episode for Natalie. I agree with you, Kirsten. I'm so glad she stuck around because she might be it's her, the Noble One, and Tom from Survivor South Africa is like my favorite reality TV characters of 2018 so far.
I love Natalie so much. And what's almost more fun than loving Natalie this much is how much Twitter also loves Natalie. Like, have you seen the tweets everywhere where it's like, Natalie's not going home this week? It's just the same picture.
There's like, it's actually amazing, the sort of social media response. I will say I've really, really liked her at Tribal, and especially rewatching the episode, I just felt she came off so just calm yet direct, and it was so different from sort of this like Natalie Napalm that we were seeing at camp. I was like, when I saw her at Tribal, my thought was, this is why she's a boss, this is why she's in charge, because of this version of her, not sort of this crazy Natalie Napalm-esque person that we were seeing at camp. I was very impressed.
Okay, but I have one question / concern about that. What about when she interrupted Jeremy to just say, I am talking now, you're dismissed?
Yeah, I've started using that.
That was not calm.
She said it in such a calm way, though. So, okay, well, yeah. So maybe that was the exception.
And Jeremy did accuse her of interrupting. And I will give her kudos for not interrupting him in that statement, much like Judd in Survivor Guatemala, where, like, you know, Margaret's like, oh, Judd has some problems. Like, no, I don't have problems. I know I'm perfect. I'm the bastion of etiquette. Don't you worry about me. Natalie at least remained calm then. But yeah, she did have the moment of, boy, you are mistaken. You're dismissed, which was absolutely incredible. I do agree, though, outside of that moment, you know, Jeremy starts off this tribal council, as Jeb Probst alludes to, basically throwing Natalie into oncoming traffic during rush hour, getting run over by every vehicle you can imagine. And Natalie just sort of comes back very calmly with like, hey, you know what? That's what he thinks. I think he's not self-aware. I was a bit confused by her meaning when she said, like, look in the dictionary. I wasn't sure if we're looking in the dictionary under self-aware or not self-aware.
Or just aware.
Or aware. Well, if you look and you see his picture under aware, though, doesn't that prove the opposite of her point?
Mm. Right, he's not self-aware.
But he could be under the opposites.
Synonym, antonym dictionary.
Antonym, yeah. It's actually the antonym dictionary.
I like the opposite dictionary. Like, the definition is actually the opposite of what it actually means.
I feel like that's a better learning tool.
that's a really heady learning tool. Like, okay, you're gonna memorize this definition, but it's actually the opposite of what the definition you're reading is.
But then on opposite day, things get really confusing.
Oh no.
I will say Jeremy looked pissed from the start of Tribal. Like, he just looked very sulking and very just like, I don't know, he was in a mood. I don't know if he had been told that he was going home. I mean, I know that in some of his exit interview press, which, you know, we'll take with a grain of salt, he was talking about how he started throwing Dan under the bus with his idol like 10 minutes before they went to Tribal. Mm-hmm. So that makes me think that, okay, something happened where, you know, he starts like seriously scrambling. He looks pissed. Dan, oh my God, Dan's face at Tribal was just me. He looks so awkward most of the time. He's just sitting there right next to, you know, the Natalie and Jeremy of it all. And he's just like, oh my God, please let this end. Please let this end. He looked so uncomfortable. Well, it was great.
That happened with Kara during the big, like, Natalie Jeremy mm-hmm. argument on the sandhill, when basically, you know, Natalie says, hey, can I talk to the three of you? No, Jeremy, you're dismissed, basically. And Jeremy's like, well, that means something. But for some reason, like, Kara was the only person that followed Natalie's request to talk in private. Yeah. And like, I'm just surprised that Kara decided to like not slink away, because that is just a horribly awkward crossfire to be involved in.
I feel like it's when you're like trapped in a car with your friend and their mom and they're fighting and you're like, I would give anything to be anywhere else right now, except for like in a car, you can't leave. She could have left and she certainly should have. So uncomfortable.
Told her she was dismissed.
Like, got a tuck and roll.
That's true. Carr did not get asked to get, did not get dismissed. I think that's sort of like, maybe that's the Natalie method. It's like, I'm having a conversation with you until I say that you're free to go. You cannot. That's sort of like the boss mentality.
So she's like a really power tripping high school teacher. She's like, hey, are you here?
Yeah.
Are you present and accounted for? Okay. I did not dismiss you yet.
Yeah, I don't, you don't hear that bell.
The bell does not dismiss you. I dismiss you.
And then everybody gets bathroom passes. I can see this implement. Well, because wasn't that the analogy that was brought up in the first episode? Was, I can't remember where, I'm sure it's somewhere on RHAP, but it was like Mike White and maybe it was Shannon Gates.
Yeah, then Mike White and Natalie are the camp counselors,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So see, it just continues.
Full circle.
Well, unfortunately, Jeremy was the kid who I guess went home early at Camp Goliath. Kirsten, do you have, I know you brought up the Natalie thing. Do you have any other questions you brought in that you want us to discuss about this episode or Survivor at large?
I mean, I'm just too distracted by Natalie's skincare tips at the end that that's all I can think about.
That was a fantastic voting confessional.
Your skin looks gorgeous, darling.
After so long, you know, I think everyone understandably fawned over Wendell's, you know, put down the eraser bro, Chris Noble confession last time. But before that, there weren't really that many big voting confessionals. And then we get one like in the very next season. It's just another reason, another drop in the bucket as to why Natalie's a fantastic character. Then not only did she stay, but she promptly sort of like did a, I don't know, a slap and then like a pat at the end by saying like, oh, and your skin looks gorgeous, darling.
That was my favorite part. So I was truly the best compliment.
She's here to stay and she's gonna slay, okay?
And boss people around, maybe. And dismiss people, maybe.
Now, the thing about like, how do we feel about the branding of the Natalie napalm? Because she talked about it in the confessional, but do we think we're trending in the Sandra-esque direction where she's gonna bring it up every time she goes into the voting booth?
I really hope not.
Yeah. If she could capitalize on t-shirts, you know, feel like that's really the next step. But, you know, if you're not going to do that, then I think she's really going to run it into the ground. And like, I worry for that. Like, I wonder if social media will eventually turn on her. It's going to be curious to see if that happens.
Well, the other thing, too, is I have enough faith in her abilities that I think she's just going to come out with these amazing reads every single time she votes. And hopefully it's for a long time to come.
Well, the thing is, Natalie's a publishing CEO, so she must know the library, and it's always open when it comes to Natalie.
I want her to, like, bring out her glasses and, like, pop on some glasses. The library is open.
I would get rid of a reunion just to have Natalie roast all the contestants at the finale.
Can we just show her how to use Instagram Live and get that going?
Yeah, she's in publishing, so print media. So it's going to take a couple steps to get Instagram Live, but I think it's doable.
I think we can get her there.
Oh, man. Okay, well, so speaking of like, just hilarious things that happened on this episode, because, yes, there was a lot of strategy, but I feel like there was also just a lot of silliness. One of the things that I want to talk about is Slamtown. Now, I know that from the beginning, we've been joking about Aha Slamtown, but I loved the conversation between Gabby and Christian about the logistics of Slamtown when Gabby was just like, what are the logistics of Slamtown? So this got me thinking about Slamtown and I tried to do some research on it. There's no Wikipedia article for Slamtown.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
I know. So I feel it is our civic duty to write the Wikipedia article for Slamtown. We know and a few things. Yeah.
Hopefully the segment will not turn out to be a big pile of civic duty.
Oh no. Yeah.
Badoom boom. So we, like, obviously we know John is the mayor. The denizens are called Slamtonians. But I think that there are some things that we can discuss when it comes to Slamtown. And obviously Wimpville, we can talk about Wimpville as well. Because I know even less about Wimpville. So I went and I looked at Wikipedia articles for towns. So general things that they talk about are geography, the economy, laws and government, education, culture. But there are also some specific things like the flag, the mascot, the nicknames. So I feel like we should just craft what is Slamtown. Let's come up with what we think Slamtown is, and then I will write the Wikipedia article for Slamtown.
Okay,
this
perfect.
Is fun because we have international correspondence as well, so we can bring a bit of like Canadian flair to it in terms of what town like life is like compared to the American counterparts.
I mean, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I think it's more or less the same, just like less sad.
Wait, it's less. What is less sad?
Canada's less sad.
Are you looking in the opposite dictionary for less sad?
Okay, less sad. Here we go.
Okay, well, so my first question is John the only person who like runs this town, or do you think there's other governments?
I was thinking about this. Here's a wild theory that I want to throw out here for you guys. Two words: puppet regime. Here's what I'm thinking. Because John, he listed off his credentials in the first episode, right? And among being the mayor of Slamtown, he's an ambassador. He's filled several presidential roles. This man seems far too busy, far too stretched out time-wise to dedicate time to actually running Slamtown. My theory is there's a secret oligarchy that is actually running Slamtown underground, and they're simply, you know, putting papers on John's desk and saying, okay, just put it with a rubber stamp and we'll get it done.
Are you saying it's mole people running Slamtown?
What? How did you get the underground mole people? maybe this is the the Canadian flair, Mike, you were referring to?
So he said
those mole people.
He said underground,
Canadian.
And it reminded me of like the episode of Arthur where there's like the missing library book, and they're like, maybe the mole people
All right. Yep. This is anything we say. I feel like with this segment, anything we say is going to be true. So I think that yes, it is now official. The mole people are running a shadow organization through Mayor John Hennigan for Slamtown.
I think it adds up. Okay, wake up, sheeple.
Wake up. It's always the mole people. I don't know. I was going to suggest, though, that, you know, it's probably Big Protein Powder that's putting up the money to get John in office, right? Or maybe, like...
Well, what's to say it's not muscle moles?
Big creatine?
Big creatine.
Is that what the mole people farm? How do you make protein powder? I don't know. I assume it's some sort of processing.
Well, it's obviously processed. It's a powder.
But you don't just harvest it. Like, mole people could harvest protein powder?
I mean, maybe they can, and they just, like, made up a fake way that it's made for us Earth dwellers.
Mm. I typed in protein powder, and the first thing that came up was protein powder pancakes, which... all the power to people who want to wake up to that. But I'll try to figure out what exactly. Maybe protein powder is the main export of Slamtown.
I definitely think protein powder is the main export. And I think then as far as like cuisine, because so I'm trying to picture what the citizens are like in Slamtown. And I feel like they all, just to step away from the underground mole people oligarchy that's actually running Slamtown. When we talk about the actual citizens, like who would elect someone like John? Do we think it is a bunch of people who are also super strong? Because I know that Christian was saying being invited to Slamtown means you have been slammed.
Oh,
does that mean you're wimpy? But then who lives in Wimpville? I don't know. I was trying to picture like what the average citizen looks like in Slamtown, and I just can't get a good picture of it.
I feel like I'm picturing people. They're jacked. They've always got a shaker bottle in their hand. Mm. They might have a barbed wire tattoo. I don't know. You know, but also I feel like there's probably a section of town which is like black turtlenecks and they're doing like slam poetry, you know?
That's the culture section. That's the culture. They have slam poetry sessions every Friday down in the artistic district. I mean, yeah, I guess because if it's about people being slammed, maybe there's some sort of, I don't know, some sort of like induction ceremony where you get your barbed wire tattoo. And you have to face down against the biggest elder in Slamtown. And once you get properly slammed, you officially enter Slamtown. But you sort of have to, like, hold your own. Maybe there's some sort of, like, tournament every year to determine who's going to be the newest inductee into Slamtown.
Mm. Is that, like, the key to the city is you get slammed?
Yeah, but I feel like... But then who are just the normal people in Slamtown? You know? I mean...
They live in fear, for sure.
Well, so, Kirsten, going back to your idea, if we have a two-party system, I like this concept of, like, wrestlers versus slam poets, and then you sort of have these, like, two cultures that are always clashing, and then they're kind of, like, always going at each other, so half the town is, like, beatniks, and the other half of the town is wearing sparkly tights, running everywhere with protein powder shakes, and then those are sort of, like, the two people that live in, two types of people that live in this town.
I love it.
Yeah, beatniks versus beatdowns. I think it totally works.
Yes! That's actually the next season of Survivor.
Yeah, beatniks versus beatdowns.
These are the beatniks. They use their words to conquer the world. These are the beatdowns. They're used to punching their way through any issue.
Yeah, I mean, it essentially boils down to like intelligence slash, I don't know, public speaking skills versus physical prowess. I don't know.
And like who can snap their fingers better.
Snaps. That's what happens when somebody gets voted out. You just get a bunch of snaps.
Oh, no.
I feel like the problem with the beatniks, I feel like the beatniks are always out of power because they do a great job in terms of the debates, but for some reason they're never mobilized enough to go to the polls. So almost always all the beatdown people go to the polls instead. And as all the beatdown party has been, you know, elected in by the underground mole people for the past like 2 decades straight.
Well, yeah, because you see the beat down people are all doing, you know, like ECA stacks. So they're all like jazzed up and energized. And the beatniks are like, you know, smoking weed and stuff.
Okay. Major import, like bizarre illegal substances. They get it through the underground tunnels that the mole people made. Okay. So what do we think the mascot for Slamtown would be? Because every town needs a good mascot.
Okay, so I was thinking about this, and I was like, something fierce, like a lion. And then I Googled lions, because I'm an adult, and there was a video of a leaping lion catching an antelope in a midair attack, and I feel like that's the mascot.
That could be the flag.
Oh, yes.
Literally taking, yes, I like that, is a lion jumping on an antelope, even though mid-air. They're probably nowhere near any sort of wildlife. I feel like that could work. I guess the question is this mascot going to represent all of Slamtown, or is it going to represent only the majority party?
Yeah, are there a bunch of beatniks being like, not my Slamtown?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think Slamtown, just like every other part of the world, is susceptible to partisan politics, and you have the ruling class and the disenfranchised beatniks.
This is really Karl Marx. This is really like his fantasy brought to life.
Oh my god, when do we get to bring in the big brother of it all?
Oh,
1984 shadow government observing everyone. Okay, well, I will bring up this. So another thing that John said, the mayor of Slamtown, although, you know, run by shadow government, propped up by big protein powder, he did say that they want to take the Davids to Slamtown at the next challenge, which then I got confused because I just assumed Slamtown was like a happy place where all of the wrestlers lived. But if you take Davids to Slamtown, is that not a vacation, or are they like being taken to Slamtown to be berated, like paraded through the streets?
Ooh.
Oh no.
Yeah, I like that. I like Wimps on Parade. It's like a bi-weekly thing that they do where they capture Davids unsuspecting and they like lead them humiliatingly through the streets as the other people point and laugh at them.
Mike, you like that?
It's a way to bring the people together. Look, Slamtown is a very divided culture. There are very few things that rouse the general public. So I feel like this could be a rallying point. Rally around the flag of the lion eating the antelope.
In midair, that's important.
Okay, but wait, do we think that the beatniks would side with Wimpville?
I mean,
let's assume
Davids
and Wimpville are synonymous, right?
No, because I feel like the beatniks would say, like, we're not like them. Like, we're like, you feel like Slamtown comes with this sense of like you enjoy the smell of your own farts. And so like you're saying like, okay, like we're not big beef heads, but like we're not Davids. We're not wimps. We're better than that.
Everybody's better than a David.
It adds up.
Oh man. Okay. Well, I think we've done a pretty good job so far, gang. So we have Slamtown. The flag is a lion tackling an antelope midair. Major export protein powder. John Hennigan is the shadow or the mayor, but in name only, obviously run by the mole people's shadow government underground oligarchy. The town is comprised of beatniks and Slamtown. Again, we did like the beat downs, which I don't even know what that means. Does that mean they're just wrestlers? Like, who are these people?
Well, it's open to interpretation.
Okay, so the beatniks and the beat downs represent the two major populations. Let's see, what else? I think that's all.
Well,
I got.
Wait. Liana, what was that one thing you wrote in, or the AI wrote in Jeremy's preseason prediction, like, me fly now?
I stay and fly.
That's the town motto.
Town motto.
Oh, perfect.
Right.
So when was Slamtown founded? That's my question.
Ooh, I think it was probably recently incorporated.
Yeah, like,
right?
2007.
Yeah.
Is that when Johnny Fairplay got slammed to the ground?
Let's see. Was that somehow related? That was actually the founding moment.
I think what happened was Johnny Fairplay said, like, I'll get away from you Bonaduce's. I'm going to found my own town where people can slam for people who got slammed. And sort of like Johnny Fairplay brought all of his wrestling people in because he had connections. And then it sort of got bastardized. He got overthrown by the wrestlers. And that's how it got sort of set up into the town that we see today. So I think that Slamtown actually had had the opposite definition in the dictionary. And then that got turned around once the wrestlers sort of declared a mutiny against Fairplay.
Okay. I think that obviously makes sense. Man, when I conceived of this original idea, I was like, oh, this will be fun. And then from oligarchy shadow government, it just completely went off the rails.
I'm sorry, are you not having fun?
Oh, I'm having so much fun. Okay, all right. We have one more category we really have to cover. Any other notable people from Slamtown? Because John Hennigan, obviously, Morrison, whatever his name is. What is his name?
He has, John, like, Hennigan. 700 names.
Right. Okay. I don't even know why I bother. I'm sorry. The mayor. We'll just refer to him as
Mr. Mayor.
So Mr. We just say mayor. So was was Fairplay from Slamtown in our origin story?
I think he founded Slamtown.
Yeah, he created it.
The founder. So, okay, well, expect to see a t-shirt soon.
Yeah. I don't know. Which t-shirt will sell out fast? Founder of Slamtown or Natalie Napalm?
If it's not Natalie Napalm, I'm rioting.
The internet's done something wrong. Do we think Natalie's from Slamtown?
She could be. I mean, she's in publishing. She could be, you know, one of the most powerful beatniks in town.
Oh, yes. Oh, okay. That's perfect. Okay. When we talk about, like, you know, major corporations that are in Slamtown, whatever publishing company Natalie works for is the sort of the foundation of the beatnik side of the city. Of yes. course.
In terms of famous alumni, every person who has won a slam dunk contest hails from Slamtown.
Wait, so is there like a third basketball faction?
Yeah, they're like the Green Party.
Oh, okay.
Right, very small. Because it's not people who play basketball. It's just people who have won slam dunk competitions. So it's a very small subset.
So there's, who was that guy who dunked on The Bachelorette last season? What was his name? I don't remember. But that happened. So I guess he's there too.
Okay, yeah. That guy.
That guy.
A notable.
No, very guy. Notable, that guy.
Yeah, okay. That name, that guy. All right. I think this is pretty great, gang. I think we've done an amazing job. Any other things that anybody wants to add to the Slamtown Wikipedia page?
So
No, go ahead. Well, I want to bring up Wimpville for a second, because I think, like, Wimpville, I guess, are they their rivals by comparison? But I guess, like, is Wimpville like the town next door? Does it live in a much more, like, arid, inhospitable climate than Slamtown just because it pales in comparison?
So I was thinking of it sort of like Parks and Recreation, where, you know, you have Pawnee, which is sort of the, like, you know, the more endearing cousin city, where it's, you know, they're just, oh, bless their heart kind of deal. Like, Wimpville gets a lot of, like, bless their heart in comparison to Slamtown.
I feel like Wimpville, you know, they wear a lot of plaid. They probably eat a lot of, like, organic foods.
In Slamtown.
Yeah.
In Wimpville.
I feel like in Slamtown, they have a lot of, like, hot sauce and red meat.
That's actually one of their main restaurants, just called Hot Sauce.
Hot Sauce and Red Meat. Well, it's like, we have a restaurant here called Smash Burger, where they take, like, the balls of ground beef and then they, like, smash them on the grill to make them into a super thin patty. I feel like that's, like, a main food in Slamtown.
Is that not how all burgers are made?
Well, no, but, like, it's different, but I can't describe it properly. But it's, like, much thinner than a normal patty.
I see. Okay.
I would say that Wimpville, I think that, you know, in whatever year they were founded, there was a law passed immediately to outlaw any gyms. sort of like in Planet Fitness, where like there's the no lunkhead rule of like you can't go around and like drop weights and basically be a big muscle head. I feel like they instituted that for the entire town.
Yeah, you would definitely not see someone from Slam Town in a Planet Fitness because they just wouldn't be allowed. They're all lunkheads. So other name, lunkheadians.
Lunkheadians, wow.
So it's like a David and a Goliath. Like a Wimvillian can turn into a Slamtonian, but a Slamtonian can't turn back into a Wimvillian.
Right. Well, I mean, we know that the immigration laws are pretty stringent depending on which direction you're going. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So. It all adds up.
All comes back to immigration.
Oh,
travel
no.
Ban. Oh, Lord. All right.
I just had a few more ideas about Slam. I was really thinking about Slam Town. So they all travel in bumper cars so what? They can slam into each other.
So is there like just like one big electrical cable running over the town at all times?
Yes.
It's like, how is that bumper car going to connect to anything unless yes. it's like automatically powered?
That's exactly right. Also, there's no door-to-door salespeople because everyone slams the door in their face.
that's how they say goodbye to each other. They just slam the door.
They really like
faces.
Storming out of rooms and slamming doors. And then I had that the sister city would naturally be Pound Town, which some people may know better as MTV's The Challenge.
Oh, Lord.
Anyways.
I do like the concept of the bumper cars as well as the door slamming, because I like to imagine that, you know, somebody who can make a lot of money in Slam Town is somebody who repairs doors, because I just feel like a lot of doors are going to be slammed off their hinges.
They import a lot of heavy doors.
Yeah, a lot of like
there's all steel doors in Slam Town.
Slam Town. Oh, well, that's important for their bumper cars. Okay, great. Well, I think we've really done a true service.
We've truly fleshed out the story of this town that has really grown into a bustling metropolitan on the surface, but underneath, much more nefarious things are going on, apparently.
Do the mole people travel in bumper cars?
I don't think that would work underground, but you'd have to ask them.
All right. Just above ground.
Yeah, it's like how everyone has like the FBI agent. It's like, does everyone else have a mole person? I'm like, hey, mole person. Tell me, do you travel in bumper cars?
What? It's like the NSA is listening to you?
Well, no, it's like the memes where everyone's like, oh, my FBI agent or whatever.
I don't know it, but I get the concept.
Anyways, that's a thing.
Like everyone has an FBI agent that's listening to you, right?
Yeah.
Is like the idea. Okay, so everybody has a shadow underground mole person that's listening to them. So we're talking about Slam Town. So the mole people, I'm sure, are listening. So please reach out to us on Twitter and let us know your modes of transportation so we can accurately and precisely fill out the rest of the Slam Town Wikipedia article.
I hope our mole person that's been listening to the B&B all this time has like gotten at least a quintuple raise to listen to all this stupidity that we've been doing for the past year.
I know, I feel terrible.
They really drew the short end of the stick that they probably can't tell because they're all blind down there. Let's move on here. Let's move out of Slam Town for a second and let's deliver a beat down here. I just have a question involving what was alluded to beforehand. Some of Jeremy's post-season exit press, which I got to be a participant in over this past week. It feels like to me, from an internet community perspective, I have not seen, to use another wrestling term, a heel turn as quick with a Survivor character in recent memory as Jeremy. I feel like Wednesday night, everyone was like, oh, we love Jeremy. He's so goofy. He's so sassy. He's such a great character. He goes out 24 hours later, after all this exit press, I feel like everyone has, understandably so, completely turned on him. Do you guys remember if there's anyone else in recent memory who everyone has done a complete 180 on that quickly?
Well, I think, first of all, we should... Okay, so let's frame this, I think, for people who have missed, because I've seen bits and pieces of his exit press.
Other stuff as well. There's some other social media stuff that I want to get into as well.
Okay, well, so to answer your question, Mike, no, I don't know, because I feel like this has been such a quick turnaround, which, although I feel a little bit vindicated, because like I said in my prediction, I didn't like him, but then I was like growing on him during the episode, so I was okay, all right, I can see the appeal behind Jeremy, and then for him to come out and do all of this nonsense, I feel better about myself.
you should have gone with your gut all along. Your gut was right.
Hey, you gotta listen to your gut.
No, I got it.
I mean, the AI has really hurt you this season, so.
I know, I'm like 0 for 3. It's brutal.
I came in, I wanted to give you the point just so you would have a point, and I just couldn't. It's the AI's fault.
It's terrible. So wait, Mike, can you outline for us some of the stuff that he's been saying?
Yes. So the main thing that has really been making the rounds of the internet is that Jeremy told basically everyone in his exit press, I will say, I think it was probably one of his main agendas that he wanted to walk into postseason press with, saying that, you know what, the reason why I went home was not really the reason that was on the show. What he alludes to is the fact that he says that Angelina and John Hennigan were in a quote unquote showmance. Now, I will also start off here by saying that to Jeremy's, I guess, credit, I feel like he really misdefines what a showmance is, because it doesn't sound like what he's alluding to has any sort of romantic implications. Like, he even said, like, oh, Natalia and Alec are in a showmance. But, like, mm-hmm. it doesn't seem, from what he was alluding to, where he said, like, they went off finding coconuts together whenever it was raining. Angelina ran for John's clothes first. But apparently, according to Jeremy, there was something where, like, she was like helping him by the fire one day, and Jeremy just had an offhand comment joke of like, oh, better hope that doesn't, you know, your husband doesn't see you doing that. And according to him, Angelina was so flustered by that comment and the idea that her husband would see her flirtations with John on the island that she decided to rally the troops against him.
Okay, yeah, that's sort of what I knew, that it was this personal relationship thing that, you know, she was like so worried that, you know, Jeremy was alluding to these things that she just had to get rid of him, which I was like, okay, what? I mean, I know editing is, you know, obviously it's an art and the editors have put together the story that you hope accurately represents the situation. But we know from hearing from people that that's not necessarily the case. But I just, for me watching the episode, I didn't get any of that at all. I think Jeremy was just behaving erratically and really just dug his own grave. I just didn't see it at all.
Well, and the other thing, too, is so if she's working closely with John and it's not a showmance, but then you have someone sitting there trying to push the narrative that it is a showmance and that you have to watch out for what's going to happen at home, I totally understand wanting to get rid of that person because they are completely misrepresenting you and could cause problems that don't actually exist.
Also, if that's a showmance, well, I have been in many relationships unbeknownst to me that I'm just finding out about. So
relatable.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, is it just a romance if there's no show involved?
I was going to say this is actually what's going to happen. I'm going to get kicked out of the B&B. I'm going to call up Angela and be like, hey, listen, Mike and Liana have a showmance and they didn't want you to know about it. And
oh, my God. Yeah. Okay. So first of all, Mike, your comment, it reminds me of when you order a cheeseburger without the cheese. It's just a hamburger. So, like, I'm in a showmance, but just not on a show.
Yeah, hold the show.
Hold the show. It was just very, very bizarre behavior. I mean, but yeah, I do get it from, if you think about it, take a step back from the showmance element of it all and just think, okay, here's a person who's perpetuating lies. Yeah, okay, I can see getting rid of him, but all of the logic that Angelina was using on the show, I think is really what she was, was the truth, that he's smarter, he would flip, you know, he really did seem to be on the outs. I mean, apart from Jeremy's relationship with Mike White, I mean, who else did he have a close relationship with? So he did seem to be on the outs of the tribe from the beginning. So I don't know, I just don't know where all of this is coming from.
Well, there's some more to this story from just the exit press. So I feel like there have been some Goliaths that have come out again, obviously against what Jeremy has been perpetuating. Angelina had a statement with Josh on The Hollywood Reporter about how, like, oh, this is ridiculous. And Dan posted a photo of, I think, him and John sort of just poking fun about, like, oh, we have this showmance going on. Don't tell his new wife. And Natalie decided to chime in on Instagram as well, just like in a comment being like, this is ridiculous. And Jeremy, whose handle is I Caught You Looking.
Oh,
which,
no.
I don't know if he created that specifically for this instance, if this is his postseason handle, just because it sort of describes the narrative that he's pushing out. But he responded to Dan and Natalie saying, I have seen both of y'all's non-photoshopped bodies, which lets me know God is already fighting my battle, ..
Rude.
Excuse me.
So then Dan responds, some of us were prepared for the game. Some of us were prepared to be the third boot. Shrug emoji, shrug emoji, shrug emoji. Jeremy responds, and some of us have passports, and some of us have to drive 3 miles over the state line to buy cheaper chewing tobacco. ... When in life, boo, it will take you further.
Which one is winning? Because that's only 3 miles to get cheaper chewing tobacco. Like, I know it's not a great habit, but, you know, like, that's a pretty good loophole.
The criteria to winning is just having a passport.
I have a passport.
Like, I don't have a passport. Like, are we all win? That's the most, I feel like that's like a very millennial thing. We all win because we all have a passport.
Yeah, this is actually...
Millennials are getting fewer and fewer passports.
Millennials are killing the passport industry. Yeah.
No, that's what the participation trophy is in life. Your passport.
Oh, so are we killing the chewing tobacco industry?
That's a good question. I mean, yeah.
It's gross.
Big, big cancer got to us.
Don't let the beatniks in Slamtown know.
Oh, no.
There's more to this. So Dan responds to that saying, I guess we can add body shaming to your long list of redeeming qualities. And Jeremy finishes his conversation by responding with, you wanted applesauce.
What?
I don't understand.
Yeah, I should probably explain the context to that. Jeremy basically said, like, in Dan's post, like, don't keep shaking the apple tree because then you'll get the apples. And so after he sort of reamed out Dan and Natalie here, he decided to put a capper on his argument by saying, you wanted applesauce.
Okay, so Jeremy's that guy who's just a total dick. And then he's like, oh, I just have too much sauce.
Okay, I didn't say you were a bitch. I said you were acting like a bitch.
Hashtag applesauce.
Hashtag applesauce.
Hashtag applesauce.
But I don't even get
that. Can we use that term now to refer to, like, when you, like, feel like you put the slam down on an argument, you, like, put the finishing move down, like, oh yeah, that's some quality applesauce.
Boom.
That's probably like an expert of Wimpyville.
Applesauce. What? Yeah. I still don't get it. Is that because it's mushy and, like, they have a mushy body? Is that what he's going for? Or is applesauce the tea? Like, you wanted the tea?
Yeah. It's like the tea.
I guess it's the food version of the tea. Like, oh, spill that applesauce.
Applesauce, girl.
The library is open.
I wonder if that could be like if the old folks home start like jazzing each other and doing like their own slam poetry, like, ooh, you spilled that applesauce, grandma.
The elementary school cafeteria is open.
Yeah, we could bring hit B&B character Gran back to spill the applesauce.
That's all I want in life.
Yeah, Gran can't have anything too hot, so she has to have applesauce instead of tea.
Yeah, well, you know, and it's gotta be soft, obviously. Yeah. So
yeah, you don't spill the tea, you sift the applesauce.
Oh.
Gross. I don't even like applesauce.
Applesauce is disgusting.
But yeah, it's so interesting to me. Again, just the turn about how people, like, I knew when people were saying, like, Jeremy versus Natalie, everyone was saying, like, oh, I want to keep them both. Like, they're just such fun characters. And Jeremy, basically through opening his mouth, both on social media and his exit press, essentially, like, sort of unwrote all that legacy. Whereas now I feel like if people are paying attention to that type of stuff, he's now pretty highly disregarded when it comes to cast members now.
Yeah. I mean, he's behaving so immature. I mean, well, this is, you know what? Natalie warned us of this. If you look in the dictionary under either self-aware or not self-aware, depending on the dictionary that you're referring to, whether or not it's regular or reverse dictionary, clearly Jeremy falls under that category. That's so crazy to me that he, like, why are you being so insecure, bro? Also, I love the fact that he's body shaming Hot Cop. Just like, yeah, really?
Like, he says, I've seen your non-photoshopped body. So are we supposed to believe that every episode of Survivor, they meticulously are editing the bodies of every contestant?
Yeah. Who's getting paid more, the intern who's photoshopping every frame of Survivor or the mole person who has to listen to the B&B?
Ooh, it's a hard one to tell.
Oh, man. Probably the mole person. This is rough.
Oh, boy. Well, I just wanted to spill some applesauce, sift through some applesauce on Jeremy's postseason press. And it certainly made for a very interesting Thursday from both my perspective and the other press people's perspective. So we shall see what some of these other cast members have to say in the weeks moving forward.
That's crazy. Yeah, I mean, it is going to be interesting with, you know, because we've had some comments back and forth, I know, from Heroes, Healers, Hustlers. So as people get eliminated, especially people who had to spend the pre-jury trip with him, we'll see if we get any more stray comments.
Oh, I can't wait.
Well, let's get into our next game here. And let's start talking about the people that actually contributed to Jeremy's demise for one reason or another. We were spurred along by this game from Becca at GreenShoe90, who reached out to us on Twitter and said, let's see, and I quote, "You all should do a Natalie or Angelina game on the B&B this week and have people try to tell those two apart. 3 weeks in and I still can't do it. Becca, your wish is our command. We are going to be doing a game. I will be subjecting Liana and Kirsten to a game simply titled Natalia or Angelina.
Oh, no.
I'm going to be asking you a question, and the answer is going to be Natalia or Angelina. Simple grading system. If you get it right, you get a point. If you don't, you don't get a point. Kirsten, you just made a nice little grousing vocalization right there. How do you feel your chances are going into this game?
Not great.
This is the entrance exam for Slamtown, part of your...
I don't think I belong in Slamtown, so now it's even worse. Oh, no.
All right, well, let's start here. So we'll go back and forth. Liana, let's start with you. So, between Angelina or Natalia, who said that Natalie standing around doing nothing while setting up camp in episode one, quote, creeped her out?
Natalia.
That is correct. That is a pretty easy one considering Natalia's general feelings about Natalie, how she wanted to even write a smiley face next to her vote this episode.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm on a roll. Also, this is 50-50. So let's see if we can just beat 50-50. Like, that's really... just if I can get more than 50% of the questions correct, I feel like I've won. So...
Yeah.
All right, okay. Kirsten, let's go to you here. When everyone was cheering at the challenge, and I love that, by the way, Jeff trying to go through his like typical scripted stuff, and everyone's like, "Woo, yeah!" Like, if we're talking about camp counselors and the campers, like, that feels like a very type of thing where they're trying to like heckle Jeff almost. But so Jeff was talking about, like, it's really coming down. One person said, quote, "I can't even see Jeff." Who said that, Angelina or Natalia?
Wait, wasn't that someone else?
Nope.
Oh, no.
It's a trick question. It's actually Gabby.
Trick question. Yeah. It was Allison.
Angelina.
That is correct. The odds were in your favor.
I really thought that was Gabby who said that.
Yeah, see, that's how I know. That's what I thought of, too.
That was ridiculous, though. Like, they all did look absolutely blinded by the rain, which I don't think we've ever seen on Survivor before.
I just enjoyed the, like, blind, literally blind cheering. Like, woo! Just, like, they're so miserable that they're just all in sort of weird deliriums. Like, ah! Jeff could be out there being like, you know, next we're gonna have, you know, a chicken fight. And they'd be like, yeah! Because they just don't know what's happening.
Yeah, like, for this challenge, you're all getting root canals. Woo!
Yeah!
Everyone's, like, taking off their shirt, dancing around. And I love that if Jeff comes back for the season being like, you know what? The weather actually made them so happy. They were such an excited cast, such an energetic cast. This was a great season.
Everything should be in the pouring rain.
Oh, no.
All right. We're all tied up. Liana, let's go back to you. Who has been a vegetarian for over 7 years?
Ooh. I'm going to go with Natalia.
I'm sorry, it was Angelina.
Brutal. But how does she get those free meals? I get, oh, because they're vegetarian meals. So,
I'm sorry, I'm vegetarian. You have to comp me for this chicken cordon bleu I accidentally ordered.
Oh, sorry, I ate the entire chicken, but I'm actually a vegetarian, so I'm gonna need to speak with your manager.
Exactly.
And there was a hair in the chicken, too.
Oh, was it the same length and texture as my hair? No. Must be from the kitchen.
She also, I know this fact from one of her secret confessionals this week, where she actually compared herself to Ty and the chicken in terms of her sympathizing with animals. So she might be jockeying for some money, but we all know that's going from Oprah's attorney to Jeremy.
Yeah, front runner for the Sia award, but no room for Sia this year. We have Oprah's attorney coming in.
Yeah, Sia yourself out. We have more important matters to get to. All right, let's go over to you. You should be cheering like the delirious noise in the rain. Yeah! All right, Kirsten, let's go to you here.
Okay.
Which one of these two has a twin sister?
Natalia.
That is correct.
Yes!
Natalia and her sister, Batalia.
Wait, no.
No, her name's not really Natalia.
Okay. Oh, for Brisa, I believed you.
Liana just believes it. She's like, what?
Yeah, I belong in Gullibleville.
Population, Liana.
Yeah.
Gullibleville, they don't even like have doors. They're like, yeah, you don't need doors. Nobody's gonna rob you. Like, okay, that's fine.
In.
Sure.
It's fine. All our tiles have Gullible written on the ceiling. So, all right.
All right, let's. So we have Kirsten leading 2-0 here, yes. Or 2-1. My apologies. Going back to Liana, in episode 2, who got tickled by Alec while they were sleeping in a memorable piece of Goliath B-roll?
Okay, I know that Alec is friends with Natalia, so I'm going to stick on the Natalia train and guess Natalia.
That is correct. Yes, when they were talking about how Natalia has Alec, there was a scene where Natalia was sleeping. Alec, in true, again, camper fashion, like, tickled her with a leaf and then got up and ran away.
I would have
punched
him.
Complex character. Oh, well, then you belong in Slamtown, see?
Yes, oh my god, I'm a winner.
Beat downtown.
All right, let's go back to you, Kirsten. Which one of the two started a non-profit outside of the game called Ready to Run?
Angelina.
Woo!
That is correct. Yes. Ready to Run. I believe it's a startup she made actually for a young woman who are looking to get involved in government. I don't know if those are mole people, but.
Yes. Oh, my
God. She'd probably find more success with mole people.
Oh, my God. Everything is coming together. Oh, my God. OK, she's going to put up the opposition to John Hennigan. She's going to find a very beatnik young woman to run against Mayor Hennigan.
It's going to be Battaglia against John Hennigan.
Yes. Oh, my God. The greatest matchup in political history. Battaglia versus the incumbent mayor of Slamtown.
This is crazy, though. The showmance is facing off against each other. Political parties set them apart.
Ugh, I can't wait. That'll also be the next season of Survivor.
All right. Let's go back to you here, Liana. During the preseason, who incorrectly pointed out to B that a cactus was actually an aloe vera plant?
I'm going to go with Angelina.
I'm sorry, it was Natalia.
No! All right, I'm batting 50%. No better than a coin flip. Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, it could be either one, because I remember that actually both of their first one outs, I remember they were both being described as like high maintenance, demanding. But B told Josh this story about how Natalia came up to her to this cactus being like, you know, that's an aloe vera plant, when it was very clearly a cactus.
Oh, see, well, I must have zoned out during B's first one out for some reason. I wonder why.
Yeah, I can't imagine that.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, I think she added his addendum to that. Like, don't worry, you can put your knee on that. It's not a cactus. It's just an aloe vera plant.
Ah, see, it's the long con.
Wait, so is that what happened to B's knee?
Yeah, she had a cactus in it, and it got aggravated by the challenge.
Got stung by a cactus.
Oh, no.
Boom. Is that a thing? I don't know. I feel like I'm conflating my bees and plants, but that's okay. I'm not an ecologist, for God's sake.
Yeah, she was just trying. She was trying to pollinate it.
Bee was? I don't know that image. Take it back. Next question.
Anyways, right, moving Kirsten, on.
Let's go back to you. Actually, very pertinent for you. Who considers herself a, quote, recovering bachelor addict?
Angelina.
That is correct.
Damn,
Angelina
girl.
Told Josh that she doesn't really watch a lot of Survivor, but she is a recovering bachelor addict.
Relatable.
That's actually one of the programs that. Crap. What was her name? Angela Bangelina? Brangelina?
Battaglia.
Battaglia.
Oh, okay. Never mind. See, I got confused.
Brangelina.
Brangelina.
That's already a thing, kind of.
No, they opened up the Brangelina Rehab Center for reality TV addiction.
Exactly.
And that's what Angelina went through, the 12-step program. And she said, you know what? I don't have a clean record. I can't run on behalf of the Beatniks, but maybe Battaglia can.
I'm just really proud of her. It's tough. It's tough.
Well, Kirsten, you have definitely won this game, but let's go to a couple of final questions. Now, here's how this one's going to work. I'm going to read a sentence that has two blanks in it. You're each going to write down the responses to those blanks separately. So you're each answering this question, you know, independently. I'm not going back and forth. And you'll get 1 point for each blank you fill in correctly. So this might be a last opportunity. If Kirsten completely gets shut out here, Liana, you have a chance to tie it up.
Beautiful.
You actually already said I won, so you can't take that away from me.
I'd like to speak to the manager.
Yes, Liana has persuaded me to go into a tiebreaker here. So I'll read the sentence out. I want you to both independently write down, fill in the blanks. The answer is going to be either Natalia or Angelina. And we'll see if you're correct. So here's the first one. Blank said they were most like Wentworth, while blank said they were most like Natalie Anderson and Parvati. So think about it carefully. One of them said they were most like Wentworth, while the other one said they were most like Parvati and Natalie, not Cole Anderson. Let me know when you're both locked in.
All right, I got it.
Okay.
The All answers right. Liana, are only what did you say? Natalie or Natalia and Angelina, right?
And Natalia.
No, Gabby is thrown in there.
Okay, I said for who was more like Wentworth, Angelina, and Natalia was more like Parvati and Natalie Anderson.
All right, Kirsten, what'd you say?
And I put the exact opposite.
As per usual with this game, Kirsten is correct.
Yes. Oh my God.
Natalia said she was most like Wentworth, and Angelina said she was most like Natalie Anderson and Parvati.
I am a queen of telling Natalia and Angelina apart.
Angelina.
See, this is.
Doesn't even watch Survivor. How does she know who these people are?
Maybe there was a Parvati on The Bachelor.
Oh, that's what it was. She got confused, and it just by luck. All right. Well, fine.
Well, here's one final question. Again, fill in the blanks here separately. During the immunity challenge, blank said that blank should have played and done the puzzle instead of Natalie.
Oh, I know this one. Okay.
So do I.
Oh, damn it. Okay.
All right, Liana.
Okay. Can't mess it up. They're going to confuse my head. They're standing right next to each other. Okay.
Hey, yep.
Natalia said that Angelina should have been in the puzzle.
Yes, that's also what I said. Natalia said Angelina should have been it.
And Liana, you get a few extra points here in an ultimate losing effort. But yes, Natalia did speak up, pulled a Dominic at the end and said, you know what? Maybe Angelina should have played. She was looking at the puzzle pieces from afar, much like she views the winning Battaglia campaign strategy.
Okay, wait, but didn't Natalie sit out the previous challenge? So didn't she have to play this one?
So Rob talked about this last week, I believe, on the podcast with Cass. I think they invoke what is now called the Abby Maria rule, where when they say back-to-back challenges, they mean within a three-day cycle. So right. Since there was a tribal council to break it up, Natalie could sit out the next challenge as well.
Oh, I don't like that.
Yeah, I know. But that's a way I understand it, too, is just because of the three-day cycle is what they mean by back-to-back challenges, which then it's so stupid. Well, I guess I don't even think Jeff Probst said it. Like, you can't set out the same person in back-to-back challenges because it literally doesn't apply if you don't have a reward and immunity challenge in the same cycle.
I'm just surprised he kept his phrase back-to-back challenges considering Pat's fate.
That's so insensitive of him to mention.
But it's okay because his tweaked back is all right.
Pat's tweaked back's all right.
Well, congratulations, Kirsten. I hope that this at least gave us all an opportunity to learn a bit more about who is Angelina and who is Natalia so that we do not separate them any further, or we do separate them further.
Well, and if anyone has any questions, they can obviously just ask me because I clearly know everything about them, you know?
Yeah, I think I'm more confused now as to which one's which. So I don't think that this really helped. I know I need to go to rehab for telling the two apart. Oh my goodness. Okay, well, I know we've talked a lot about silliness, but I do want to talk a little bit about some of the strategy because when I was watching this episode, there was one thing that really stood out to me. We never really saw it pay off, at least not in this episode, but this concept of Christian and Nick throwing Gabby under the bus when they came back from tribal council. And I don't really have a concrete question about this, but I was just thinking about this as a strategy. Like, I'm trying to think of any other times where we've seen people come back from tribal and just very blatantly throw someone else under the bus, sort of to protect themselves, that they can sort of ingratiate themselves back with sort of the minority on the tribe. I actually really love this strategy, but I think that there could be a lot of negative or positive ramifications moving forward. So I guess I just wanted to get both of your thoughts on this. Mike, I don't know if you have any ideas about this strategy in general or some specifics about what could come out of it.
In terms of historical precedents, the one that comes to mind for me immediately, and it wasn't necessarily a pivotal swing vote, but I'm thinking back to Teresa Cooper in Survivor Africa, where, you know, she promised Clarence that she wouldn't write down her name. And so this sent Lex down in his own Jeremy-esque paranoid spiral, where I don't want to say she necessarily threw the blame onto Kelly, but she didn't necessarily speak up when Lex said, was it Kelly? If this wasn't Kelly, like, somebody please fess up to it. So I do think there is sort of a legitimate strategy, especially after, you know, a pivotal first vote. Someone like Nick, you know, I found it at my exit press with Jessica that, like, he was in very close with that alliance. And so I think the last thing Nick would want to do would be to burn that bridge. So, and, you know, it's no skin off of his back. He's not the one who's connected with Gabby. Christian is. So I think that, especially from Nick's perspective, as sad as it is to watch poor Gabby get blamed completely for this flip, because really, another thing about the editing, which was pointed out on Twitter, it was super interesting how previously on and the general narration of this episode said, oh, it was the Mason-Dixon line who did it, when, like, pretty sure it was Elizabeth who really was the one who spurred along. Like, poor Elizabeth and Lyrsa got no content this episode, despite being so many, you know, key cogs in the machine last episode. But I will say that from Nick's perspective, especially, I think it's a good strategy to use when there's still, you know, eight people left in the tribe, and especially there's a long way in the game to go. You want to keep as many solid relationships as possible.
Yeah, and again, yeah, from Nick's perspective, it seems to make a lot of sense, but I really don't understand Christian, you know, falling in line with that and also throwing Gabby under the bus.
I guess, like, if you're B or Carl, why would you believe that? Because then if why would Christian vote with them? You know what I mean? I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to think of how Christian or Nick, I mean, I'm just trying to think of, like, how Nick could sort of sell this of, like, I don't know, because he really was the swing vote in that situation. So how do you sell that Gabby made the move? But obviously you're the one that made the decision to vote that way. You didn't have to. And then also, why would you believe that Gabby's the one who's this mastermind? I mean, I don't know. Apparently B believes it, but all we see of Gabby is poor Gabby crying about, you know, stuff, and then also wondering about the logistics of Slamtown. Like, I don't really see a mastermind there, whether or not, you know, they think, oh, she's really playing us by just crying all the time and talking about Slamtown. I don't know. And then also, I wonder how much Christian is sort of going along with this as well. Like, I feel like, yes, they are the Mason-Dixon line and they are acting in tandem, but I think that there are obviously different approaches to their strategy. Like, Nick clearly just wants to throw Gabby under the bus because he wants her out so he can get Christian. Christian, I think it's definitely more of a self-preservation strategy of maybe he can play that he got caught up in everything that Gabby's trying to do. And he, you know, is last minute and he got pulled over. I don't know. I just think it's really interesting, the situation.
Well, I think that going back to this idea of, like, why Gabby, again, from my interview with Jessica, she seemed to tell me that Gabby and B were particularly very close. You know, B was the one that was apparently pulling Gabby into this majority, which is why they thought that they had her vote. So when you look at it from that perspective, when you have these confessionals from B especially saying, hey, I'm, you know, pretty pissed off that Gabby betrayed us, that sort of makes sense. So maybe it's just because they felt most personally burnt by her from the people left in the game. It makes sense why, you know, if someone puts this idea out there of, oh, Gabby was the mastermind behind it, they're like, yeah, Gabby betrayed us. It makes sense that she would be the one behind it to break the Gabby, I guess, if that's their portmanteau, which doesn't really help anything. But I also want to bring up, like, a very salient point that I think Rob said during the know-it-alls this past week of, I can understand, again, the reason why to throw her under the bus, but I think you could just as easily say, hey, Jessica was doing all these machinations. She was too powerful because Jessica is powerless to speak back about it because she's not there. Blame it on the deceased instead of, you know, the person standing next to you at the funeral.
Well, and I think there's a really good point in there about them feeling the most burnt by Gabby, because Gabby is so emotional from what we've seen, all the tears and, you know, really being, you know, in her feelings. That also could make it feel more personal when she does go against you, right?
Yeah, I mean, and it's possible, you know, Christian and Nick are sort of reading the room and seeing who the minority felt most betrayed by, right? Because where is Elizabeth in all of this, right? She's not taking any of the flack. It could have to do with the social dynamics that we saw where, you know, Gabby was the closest to Christian. And so, you know, maybe Christian could kind of play like, oh, he was under Gabby's spell. I don't know. But yeah, I like, you're throwing Gabby under, this is what I'm talking about, long-term ramifications. I'm just thinking you're throwing Gabby under the bus, yet she's still there. Right. Whereas Jessica is not. She's easier to throw under the bus. And this could come back to bite you in the in the behind? I just don't know.
Yeah, it's a good question, especially like if, you know, she gets swapped over with someone like Nick. I guess the question is, would those comments come back? You know, will, do you think that, I guess maybe a benefit of someone like Nick and Christian doing this is that Carl and Davey and B are so burnt by Gabby that I don't think they necessarily will want to go to her and talk to her. And so there's a mitigated chance that this information will get out that they're turning on her. But with the swap coming next episode and considering the various, you know, permutations as to how people are going to turn out on these tribes, it's going to make things extremely interesting. I think Gabby could be in either a very powerful position. You know, if like, let's say there's four Davids and three Goliaths, and Gabby decides to flip over because she hears that the Davids were going to get rid of her next. Like, to your point, depending on how that information comes out, it could really come to bear fruit, in a good way or a bad way.
Also, I think B is screwed. Like, I know everybody's talked about this at length, but the fact that the editors included all that stuff about her knee, which B's knees, you, Mike, Matt Ligori, and Puya all had the, like, pretty much the same tweet all in a row. It was beautiful, and I loved it.
That was iconic.
Yeah. B's knees.
Yes, we're the Natalia, Batalia, Critalia triplets when it comes to the B's knees tweets.
Critalia?
Critalia, yes, the triplet that nobody talks about.
Oh, that's so sad.
I don't know. I just have this obsession with the fact that maybe I'm thinking back to, again, Survivor Guatemala, where you had Cindy and Mindy and Jamie and Raimi. I'm sort of obsessed with this idea of parents naming their twins with almost the exact same name to keep them, you know, easily detected.
So when they get the name wrong, it's not that bad. It's like Natalia.
Yeah. Well, then they also have to name their pets that, because my mom would call me the dog's name all the time. She should have named the dog and I something very similar, like Liana and Biana, and then we would have been okay.
Liana and Rihanna?
Liana and Rihanna.
Does she ever call you by the house chicken's name?
Oh, no. Thankfully, she hasn't called me Brahma Mama yet, because that would be pretty brutal.
So. I mean, Brahma kind of rhymes with Liana.
Yeah, it does. That's right.
Yeah, very, very like, I think you can make a slam poem out of that. Brahma Mama Liana.
Oh, man. All right. Everybody submit your, this is like our version of the Wandoffs. We're going to start the Beatnik poetry sessions.
Please, yeah, the B&B Beatnik poetry corner.
Yeah. Send your submissions. Right, we'll get a lot of hate. It'll be fun. I love it.
Well, speaking of submissions, let's end here with our final segment of each and every week here on the B&B, the question of the week. Last week's question of the week, speaking of the Gabby Christian dynamic, which Survivor player would you want to play in the sand with? Got a lot of fun answers here. First, let's start with John John, who said the Survivor player I'd love to play in the sand with is Stephanie Johnson, so we can write inspirational quotes.
Well, and then also with, was it Jenna who wrote the fish in the sand? Also from Ghost Island.
Oh, they're talking about there's also Trish who wrote Shame on You, Lindsay, in the sand during Cagayan.
So you can get a whole group together.
Yeah, the sand writers. It's a thing. The loony one says, as someone who is looking to go into the medical field, I would love to play in the sand with Sophie. Mostly because I think it would be easy enough for us to just sit on the beach and be all nerdy and awkward and neurotic and snarky together, you know, until one of us finally snapped and tries to bury the other one in the sand. Permanently.
That took a dark turn.
Oh no.
Yeah, I don't know if the RAK killer struck with the loony one.
Yeah, right.
They are not allowed to play in the sand with Sophie.
No playing in the sand. Yeah. And then James has to come, you know, so we can help dig the hole. Yikes.
Mummy Gaga says, if I could play in the sand with any Survivor contestant, I would play with Sandra Diaz Twine, in which we build a huge sand castle for the Queen of Survivor. Do you think Sandra could live in a sand castle?
She's much better than that.
Not for very long, given the weather on the Fijian islands, right? I mean,
yeah, it's not even sand. It's just mud at this point.
Oh, my God. This is like the kid's story of the big bad wolf and the three little piggies. And one piggy builds a shelter in the sand that you dug in the sand. The next little piggy builds a sand castle. And then finally, the third little piggy builds an actual shelter. Or gets, you know, taken away like they did in Millennials Gen X to be in a safer place.
Yes, exactly. The third, they all got evacuated when the big bad cyclone came in to blow the shelters down.
And it huffed and it puffed and it blew the trees down.
And it blew Pat's back
out.
Aww.
It's okay. Pat's tweaked back's all right.
We actually got three of our listeners, Kyle Silva, Ben Martell, and the Melissa Ba. We're all on the same page here of building a sandcastle with Sandy Bergen from Survivor Token Chains.
I mean, that makes sense. That makes sense. Playing the sand with Sandy. I get it.
It's too much.
The Melissa Ba also said never play in the sand with Shamar, ..
Yeah, that's smart.
get sand in your eye. Elizabeth said, I would absolutely play in the sand with Michael Yerger, and it would not be appropriate to be filmed.
Ooh, sign me up, girl. Also, because I love the concept of, like, playing in the sand, and then I think to, but platonically, of course.
Yeah, platonically.
A platonic sand relationship. Let's see. Parker Schimler says, since you guys outed my secret last episode, I might as well play in the sand with the contestant most likely to be a serial killer, Mateo.
Why does he need the sand bucket so sharp?
I think he's trying to kill us.
With sand.
Well, get buried in the sand, right? That's like...
Permanently.
Yeah, thanks, loony one. And now I understand your name. I'm looking into it much more.
Save us, mole people.
Yeah, the mole people.
Yeah, they live in the sand.
Dig us up.
Jonathan Troyer says, I would play in the sand with Shane because he has a record of finding fun substances on sand.
Is it the... Yeah, but then they make you give it up, right? Because they would never let you keep it. Right? Didn't production take it?
You could sneak things away. You know, if Nick Nia Danza could build a pocket in his shorts for an idol, you could feasibly build a Coke pocket if you want to.
Just listen to Dominic Abate, right? The slit.
Put a slit in your bag, and that's where you hide all your hardcore drugs.
Yeah, because the production definitely doesn't see a difference in you creating a pocket in your bag for an idol versus hard drugs. Yeah,
pretty much the same.
I mean, idols are, they give you the same ecstasy as drugs.
Idols are the gateway drug.
I'm pretty sure, like, Davey's reaction of let's go, let's go, let's go is, like, very similar to when one does a really hard line of something, and, you know, in the back alley of a club.
Some white sand.
Yeah. Ooh, some white sand. Dan Sinensky says, I would build sandcastles and such with Russell Swan. I take playing in the sand very seriously, and I know he would finish the job or pass out trying.
Ooh, yeah, it could be Russell Swan and Beast Mode Cowboy. Both passing out together, building a sandcastle. Can you...
And then you just bury them.
Oh, God.
Yeah, they're really good at napping on the beach.
Can you imagine, though? You know how when you get a scar and you want to say it's from something cool, not something stupid? Can you imagine being like, yeah, I got this injury from, you know, I was like, I passed out. It was super intense. You're like, what were you doing? Building a sandcastle. least intense activity ever.
And we'll finish here with Chris Atad, who actually said, I would play in the sand with a Mike Bloom type. I feel he would be the Christian and I am the Gabby and we'd make sandcastles. I appreciate the sentiment, Chris. I'll just let you know, my form is horrible when it comes to sandcastles. So it'll look more like a hill than a castle at the end, but I think we'll still have a fun time.
When did you play Survivor, Mike?
I was the 25th contestant on season 14.
Oh, of course. Right.
Oh, I thought you were going to be on the beat next season.
What is a torch? A flame that burns and standing tall. Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
No,
Thank
I
you very much.
I can't snap for that. I'm sorry.
Is that what the beatniks do when it's raining and Jeff's trying to explain the challenge? They're just snapping wildly.
Yes. Instead of all the wild cheering, they're just like trying to snap their fingers.
Right. But in the water,
it's so wet.
And it's like too wet. They're like, ugh, it's not working.
All right, let's go around the horn here. Kirsten, which Survivor would you want to play in the sand with?
Okay, so I put a lot of thought into this, and I came to the realization that any of the NSFW stuff, you know what, there's too much sand. It's not practical. So I want to hang out with Suri because I think it'd be the only opportunity to actually hang out with Suri.
Oh, so that's so logical. That's so smart.
Yeah, just take don't take her near the leaves or that date is over.
Yeah, no leaves. So I said Brad Culpepper because he'd use his expertise in design to make the most bomb ass sandcastle this side of Fiji. And I want to win. I'm a type A personality, so I just assumed that there was some sort of competition for our sandcastles. And I think I would win with Brad Culpepper as my partner.
Well, and there would definitely be ball decorations. And we all know you're into that.
Big old balls.
Oh, boy. Well, I assembled the Sand Squad, which is the aforementioned Sandra. We can bring in Sandy. Yeah. We can bring in Cassandra from Survivor Fiji. Sue Sandhawk, I think, would probably be our leader, though.
Well, that's not fair. I want a whole team of people. Who else?
Yeah,
is
I was told
Wendell,
one survivor.
Brad Culpepper. Who else is good at building stuff? Boston Rob.
Sylvia from Survivor Fiji.
Yeah, I mean, I heard Pat was really good at building a shelter.
As long as his tweaked back's all right, then I guess.
As long as there's no boat, like, it'll be fine.
Yeah, don't build a sand boat or that Pat will run away.
It's traumatic.
All right, well, the question for next week, there was this fun little bit before John got into his human skills, talking. There were the John and Kara found a hermit crab, which they named Seabass. Which is a kind of a weird name for a hermit crab. But, you know, they had just seen a few episodes of Ghost Island where the nickname had been brought up. And it got me thinking, in honor of Seabass the hermit crab, what would be a good survivor name for a pet? It can be a concept related to survivor. It can be a survivor contestant. In fact, I think we know people who have pets named after survivor contestants. So if you actually have real life answers, feel free to provide it.
In fact, in this Skype call right now.
Yeah. Well, wait, can you remind everyone what did you name your pet?
Okay, first of all, I did not name my pet. I kept the name that my pet came with, but my cat came named Vetus.
Aww.
And I was like, it's destiny.
It's destiny. It's meant to be.
Meant to be.
Also, I will say, when this is something that I only caught on the rewatch, but they're racing snails. The Goliath tribe has like like six or four or five snails are all lined up and they're like cheering them on as the snails like race forward.
Also naming a hermit crab Seabass totally makes sense because Sebastian the crab from the Little Mermaid.
Oh, that's true. I guess it's just having Sebastian and then having it called Seabass. I think like maybe that's one step too far because it's, I don't know, it's like naming your cat dog. Like, it doesn't really, you're looking, you hear one thing and you see another. There's a discrepancy there.
That's a great name. I'm going to name my next cat
dog. Yeah, Kirsten, why did you not name your cat dog instead of Vetus?
Well, because I didn't name my cat. I kept the names that they came with. So I have Steffi and I have Vetus.
You know what? My cat's name is Clam. I just,
and Pearl.
Yeah, but like, I just realized I have a cat that's named after a different animal. Like, and I'm talking about doing it. Like, I haven't done it. Oh, but Clammy's just so, Clam. She's not.
To flesh out the Boris family pet lineage here, we have Clam, Pearl, and Brahma Mama the chicken.
We're just really thematic in my family.
Brahma Mama.
So you guys have a bunch of ways to reach out to us. Both your fictional or real life names for survivor themed pets. You can always reach out to us on social media using the hashtag RHAPBNB, the letter B, the letter N, the letter B. You can always respond to this post in the Rob Has Awesome Patrons group, as well as on the Rob Has a Pod, Rob Has a website.com. You can also email us at RHAPBNB@gmail.com, as well as send us any long-term or lengthier games that you want us to do. Or you can be like Eric H., who I actually really appreciate this, emailed us earlier today to ask about a joke from the second episode of The Neighborhood.
Oh, no, I haven't watched it yet. I promise I'll get back to you.
Don't spoil it for her.
Yeah, no spoilers. There's a washcloth joke that is apparently very confusing to Eric.
Oh, Global TV posted that video.
Oh, crap. All right, I'll definitely watch before. I actually got depressed because I forgot that it was on Mondays. I thought it was on Tuesdays. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go home and watch The Neighborhood. And then it already aired. And then I was too lazy to go find the episode. So. But I'll get there. We'll explain the washcloth joke, I promise.
In true sincerity, if you guys have questions about The Neighborhood, feel free to reach out. Maybe we can make a segment about it to figure out the humor behind The Neighborhood. Yeah,
this is our what's a like MEU version of a podcast award. This is like truly our segment that will get us on the map.
Oh no.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it'll be like a podcast within a podcast almost. We'll try to explain the methodology of these mole people writers for The Neighborhood.
Deconvolution of The Neighborhood.
Well, Kirsten, thank you so much for coming on and gracing us with your presence as we wrote the narrative of Slamtown. You were crushing it to figure out who is Angelina, who is Natalia. Thank you and Vetus for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time. And I, you know what? I guess I don't need to speak to your manager.
Aww.
Oh, thank goodness, because we don't know where they are.
Yeah, where is he?
They've abandoned us a long time ago.
Yeah, right. Any sort of management here? Yeah, that doesn't exist.
It explains a lot. Right.
So, Kirsten, if people want to hear your social media musings about reality TV and otherwise, how can people follow you?
So you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Kirsten Said What, and I'll always post there if I'm getting up to any other shenanigans. I am actually Mary from Mary Mondays on the live feed updates, and I are starting a podcast about Riverdale. We're going to record the first episode today, so keep an eye out for that.
Ooh, are you more of a Betty or a Veronica?
Well, turns out I'm a Betty.
As a Betty, what does that mean for the way you play?
Well, it just means I love a high blonde ponytail, really.
The most ambitious crossover yet. Riverdale meets Survivor.
Oh, no.
All right. Well, I know that the guy who plays Archie on Riverdale is a big Survivor fan, so it's not necessarily out of the question.
He's got a lot more to worry about right now, okay?
Ooh, a possible teaser for what's to come with the great Mary and Kirsten. Liana, how can people follow you on social media?
So you can find me on social media. I'm at Liana Boras, LianaBoraas, tweeting various musings on reality television and otherwise. Also, I just want to point out, speaking of social media, I did a search for the hashtag Slamtown on Twitter, and I found a tweet from 2010 that says, I just found out we have a massive supply of string cheese in the snack room. Hashtag Slamtown. Hashtag did I just eat 5 cheese sticks with 7 question marks. So I think somehow we need to incorporate string cheese into Slamtown, but we can sort that out later.
Yeah, Polio is the main sponsor of Slamtown. You can always follow me at AmMikeBloomType. You can check out the exit press I do every week for Parade with Survivor contestants. We mentioned the very interesting Jeremy exit press that we all did this week. Feel free to check that out as well. I've been doing a lot of stuff on The Hollywood Reporter as well. I got to go to New York Comic Con and attend a couple of panels, including Star Trek and the 25th anniversary of Boy Meets World. And I just did a big write-up about a recent Netflix show that launched called The Haunting of Hill House, which I highly recommend. People who listen to The Hamster Factor know I am not a horror guy, and I actually really enjoyed this show. It all dropped on Netflix yesterday, so I highly recommend you check it out. Also, this past week, it just got released. I talked for nearly 3 hours with Nick Iadanza and Shannon Gates wrapping up this season of Australian Survivor, which had a very interesting outcome, to say the least. So we broke it all down. We wrapped up the season. We wrapped up International Survivor in 2018 in general, which is crazy to say considering all the malarkey that occurred over the past few months. But now we are concentrating specifically on Survivor David versus Goliath as it goes into the swap. And joining us next week to talk through the swap, and I'm assuming much more, will be the great Kurt Clark to break it all down. It should be a really interesting swap, and I'm assuming, I mean, this season has been a lot of fun so far, so I can only assume what the swap is going to provide as well.
Woo!
Yeah, oh, yay! I can't see you, but yay! Yeah!
Well, thank you all for not seeing but listening to us. We always appreciate it. Let us know your thoughts, answer to the question of the week, other games you have, etc., anywhere on social media. Special thanks to Scott St. Pierre for editing this all behind the scenes, Paul Osselson, our head writer, and Will from America for the use of our theme song. That's going to do it for this week on the B&B. Kirsten, thank you so much for coming on. Liana, great work as per usual. We'll check you out at your next stay. You're dismissed.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the RHAPBMB. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name.